Vet Voice. Our Money's Worth. I enjoyed reading the article by Paul Glader, January. The penny is as ridiculous as a mill coin would have been in the 1960s. It should be done away with. I also think our smallest banknote should be the $5 bill, and that $1 coins should be used in place of the dollar bill. I believe coins would be much more popular in the United States if we had a $2 coin to go with the $1. In Europe, they use 1 and 2 euro coins. The 1 euro is a bit smaller than our quarter, and the 2 euro is a bit bigger than our quarter. We should try it. Dave Eager, Harrison, Ohio. As a coin collector, I found Paul Glader's article very interesting. One point, however. He makes several references to pennies. The U.S. Mint has never made a penny. The Brits make pennies. We make cents. I love your magazine. I read it cover to cover when it comes. Dave Timberlake, Colville, Washington. I read Paul Glader's article on money with interest and its implication that we are moving toward a cashless society. I'm not sure if that will occur or not, but I can attest to the fact that many people still use cash, because I find it on the ground every time I go for a walk. Years ago, my cardiologist implored me to get more exercise, so I began taking walks in the vicinity of my home. Upon doing so, I noticed that I regularly found money on certain routes, especially in commercial areas. Since 2005, I have assiduously recorded what I find in a journal, and by the end of 2017, I had a grand total of $1,117.44 in cash. I can only speak for myself, but I like cash. I like the feel of it in the pocket of my jeans. Jack Russell, Downey, California. This article points out that some government leaders have proposed eliminating the penny. Indeed, Canada and New Zealand have made these changes in their currency. I have been to Canada on business and observed that every retailer still includes the Canadian penny when ringing up a sale. They round up your total sale price, as they are not absorbing the difference. The consumer is paying for the elimination of the penny. One can only imagine how many thousands of dollars they are losing over time. Charles J. Shaw, Morrisville, Pennsylvania. The Remarkable Raymond Brackett. Thanks for Jeff Stouffer's article about Marblehead's Ray Brackett, January. I often wondered how Post-32 acquired autographed copies of Marshall Foch's and General Pershing's photos, which hang on our headquarters wall in Marblehead's old townhouse. This article answered that question and filled in much of the early American Legion history of Marblehead. We have many other artifacts from the World War I Legionnaires who established Post-32. One key historical reference should be noted, however. In 1775, Marblehead had no militia of fishing ships, but instead a completely trained and outfitted regiment of 10 companies, composed mostly of fishermen and sailors who enlisted in Glover's Marblehead Regiment. Additionally, the first armed vessel was commissioned by General George Washington while at Cambridge, Hannah, which was owned, captained, and crewed by Marbleheaders. Brackett proudly carried on that naval tradition that began in Marblehead and continues today. Bob Urbetta, Adjutant, American Legion Post 32, Marblehead, Massachusetts. Citizenship and Military Service. The January Commander's message is excellent. National Commander Brett Rystad's statement of principles on how to effectively and fairly solve the problem of illegal immigration should be required reading for elected officials. Without borders, we are not a country. And as always, we welcome and need immigrants who will become good citizens. Veterans who served honorably are an ideal source. John Robert Stevens, Prescott, Arizona. The column by National Commander Brett Rystad caught my attention because I am one of those foreigners immigrants who served in the Army and became a naturalized U.S. citizen. I came to California from Japan with a tourist visa in July 1970. I went to the Selective Service Office on Hollywood Boulevard and volunteered to be drafted as soon as possible. The clerk looked puzzled. I received a notification to report to the induction station on Wilshire Boulevard on October 27, 1970. That day, we boarded buses for Fort Ord. After basic training, I was transferred to Fort Lee, Virginia, for AIT, then to Fort Story, Virginia, and spent a few months as part of an honor guard. I requested a transfer and was sent to Schofield Barracks, 25th Infantry Division, then to Fort Shafter in Honolulu, assigned to the U.S. Army Mortuary, Hawaii. In March 1972, I finally received U.S. citizenship. It was one of my happiest and proudest days. I thanked God, Jesus, my new country, the Army, my family, and all my friends in Japan and the United States of America. After I was honorably discharged from the Army, I got out 3 months early to attend college, and in exchange joined the California National Guard for a year. I attended Los Angeles City College. In 1975, I became a firefighter with the Los Angeles Fire Department and retired in 2009 after 35 years. I agree that anyone who served in the military and received an honorable discharge should be able to become a U.S. citizen if they so wish. If they don't, but would like to stay in the country, they should receive permanent residency. I believe most immigrants, legal or illegal, would be good citizens after discharge. Congress should reward them with citizenship instead of illegal immigrants who demand their rights. Jimmy D. Nishimura, Windsor, Colorado. I am Vice Commander of the American Legion Department of Labor Post 42 in Washington, D.C. Commander Eystad's column resonated with me. I was inducted into the Army during the Korean War period on March 17, 1953, just over a year after emigrating to the United States. I was naturalized alongside 260 other servicemen at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, on November 24, 1953. Allegedly, it was the largest naturalization ceremony of servicemen up to that point. I was then a stateless citizen, Holocaust survivor, and understandably honored to become a U.S. citizen. After my discharge in March 1955, I contributed to my adopted country, pioneering the idea of presidential televised debates with the personal endorsement of former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt and Illinois Governor Adlai E. Stevenson. Fred A. Kahn, Bethesda, Maryland. The American Legion magazine welcomes your opinions. Include your hometown and a daytime phone number for verification. All letters published are subject to editing. Due to the volume of mail received, not every letter can be acknowledged. The American Legion Magazine, P.O. Box 1055, Indianapolis, Indiana 46206. Magazine at legion.org.